Hello everyone, Stuart Smith here with a quick G-Talk Extra Time programming note. Because there was so much that went on last weekend in G2 and G3, John and I decided to split the podcast into two separate editions, one focusing solely on G2 and one focusing solely on G3. Hopefully you'll get a lot more out of it, as there's quite a lot of detailed analysis and comment on the games that happened last weekend. So, without further ado, let's get on with the G2 podcast.
Hi everyone, welcome to another episode of J-Talk Extra Time. I'm John Steele, and the next voice you'll hear is my regular co-host, Stuart Smith. Hi Stuart, how are you?
Yeah, I'm doing well, John, thank you very much. We had a pretty eventful weekend in J2 and J3, right?
As per usual it seems. I think this is what we're going to have to get used to. Still got heavy rain wreaking havoc across parts of Japan. Stuart, so that not that it's the most important thing, but it was evident in a couple of the games, a couple of the pitches. But yeah, as usual, we've got enough goals and incident to talk about. So we'll get started with J2. As usual, round four was played over the weekend. I think we should start with the Friday night game between Okayama and Kitakyushu. Notable, I think, because this was the first game with spectators allowed into the stadium, since the since the COVID-19 enforced break. So obviously fans are limited to a maximum of 5,000 at the moment, but I think and some people might say it's a bit too early, to have supporters back in the grounds. There might be some merit in that, but just speaking personally, I thought it was good to see the camera panning across the ground, City Light Stadium, see some fans in the stadium enjoying the game. So the match itself, Stu, was pretty exciting, I thought, pretty entertaining, lots of chances. Kitakyushu eventually won 2-0, which is a bit of a surprise result for me. But in the first half, it was goalless. The best chance probably did come for Okayama, and Paulinho hit the post with a long-range effort. But Kitakyushu won it with 2 goals in 3 minutes in the second half. First of all, Daigo Takahashi did well to control a loose ball in the penalty area and score in the 61st minute. And just 2 minutes later, the substitute Ryo Sato went clean through to double the lead. He'd only been on the field for 3 minutes, and he scored a goal against FC Riku in the last round as well. So he's on a bit of a hot streak. What did you make of this one, Stu?
Yeah, I was impressed with Kitakyushu, actually. Obviously, they were coming off the back of a good win against FC Riku the previous week. And Okayama started quite well. I think you mentioned Paulinho's shot, and also Shintaro Shimizu hit one from far out that looked like it was going until the goalkeeper pushed it away. But yeah, in the second half, it was a decent finish from Takahashi for the opening goal. And then there was a great through ball. I can't remember who played the through ball to Ryo Sato. And Sato kept his cool and put it past William Popp in the Okayama goal. I mean, sometimes I think if we talk about the Gunma Machida game later on, it's not always a clear cut thing when players go through on goal, because sometimes when they have a lot of time to think about it, they can start to second guess themselves, or the goalkeeper can get into good positions. But I think that he kept his cool and he put it away, and it is a good win for Kitakyushu. And they'll be interesting this weekend, because they're hosting they're hosting Kyoto Sanga, I think, and that will be a very interesting game for Kyoto coming off their win as well. But yeah, just in general, highly impressed with Kitakyushu last Friday. Yeah,
you just can't bet against Shinji Kobayashi, can you? He's very, very wily. He knows what's needed in J2. Kitakyushu doing the business at the moment. Yeah, disappointing for Okayama. I don't think they really Didn't really get going in the second half, but yeah, as you mentioned, another round of games coming up thick and fast on Wednesday this week, which we'll get to later. I think we'll move on and talk a little bit about the game between Kofu and Kanazawa, Stu. So Kofu ended up winning this one 2-1. In the first half, though, there's a nasty clash of heads between Kofu's Mike Havanar, remember him, and Kanazawa's goalkeeper Yuto Shirai. This ended up with Havanar looking like he may well have lost a tooth, and Shirai ended up playing on with his head quite heavily bandaged. I'm not sure if that was the right decision, but still. In terms of goals, Tatsushi Koyanagi put Kofu 1-0 up when Shirai spilled a header from Havanar. And then that young prospect, Junior Barros, scored again. Stu, he went clean through and went straight, fired a shot straight through Shirai for 2-0. Raisi Shimazu, who came on as a sub at half-time, managed to pull one back in the 54th minute for Kanazawa. I think that was his first goal in the J-League, if I heard correctly. And I don't know what you made of this, but I thought Kanazawa actually had a decent shout for a penalty right at the end in second half stoppage time. So an attacker and defender came together in the box, and I didn't get a good line of sight as who, but there's a sort of a clothesline, a wrestling move in there, and nobody seemed to make much of a fuss about it. But I've definitely seen penalties given for less. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, I think it was a bit of a theme this weekend, like penalties. Well, certainly ones that looked like penalties were not given. I think there was one in the Matsumoto game, and there's one in the Omiya game as well. But I think for this one, yeah, you go back to the first half, and again, it's a clash of heads or clash of faces or whatever you want to call it. I genuinely think that, like, it shouldn't, that players that have the that clash heads, I think they should be taken off. I think they should be given an independent medical assessment to see if they've got any concussion symptoms. If they haven't, fair enough. Strap them up, tape them up, whatever. Put some dental stuff in for Havanar's fangs, and then yeah, let them get back on the pitch. But I think they should be taken off. It's the second time this season we've had goalkeepers kind of impeded by head injuries. Kofu, I mean, I think this was their first win of the year, I think. And yeah, it was only a matter of time. They do look good going forward. I mean, it is a little bit galling to see Junior Barros, who quite frankly looked like he couldn't give a shit when he was at Gifu. He scored twice now for Kofu, and he just, yeah, he did what strikers should do. Put the ball on target and make the goalkeeper work for his money. And unfortunately, it went under Shirai. I think it was a good goal from Raisei Shimazu as well. It's an interesting name, and it was a really good goal because it sneaked in at the off the post and in. And yeah, I think that Kofu needed that, and Kanazawa won't be too disheartened, I don't think, because I think Kofu are actually a decent side, and it was only a matter of time before they picked up their win. And yeah, it were. I think it's the head stuff that causes me the most consternation from this game.
Fair enough. Yeah, it was a good match. I think quite plenty of pretty much like the Okayama game, plenty of chances at both ends. Yeah, to enjoy. Okay, Stuart, we'll take a detour to Niigata now and their game against Matsumoto. So we bigged up Niigata as being like a goal machine over the first couple of rounds. So I think it was inevitable that they would have a lower scoring match at some point. And it came at the weekend, didn't it? Niigata eventually beat Matsumoto 1-0, the big swan. In my notes, I've written this was a hard-fought win, and the game had quite a bit of needle, by which I mean strong challenges for. I'm not sure how common that idiom is. A bit of needle, you know, some rugged or slash bad tackles. Anyway, Daichi Tagami volleyed in the winner following a corner in the 33rd minute for Niigata, and Matsumoto's goalkeeper Tomohiko Murayama made a great save to stop Fabio from making it 2-0 to Niigata just before half time. But as you alluded to earlier, there was a clear foul on Toyofumi Sakano, the Matsumoto striker, in the second half, but the referee kind of waved away the protest. Looking at it again, it may have been just outside the box. So maybe a free kick rather than a penalty, but there's no question it was one of the most obvious fouls you'll ever see. So you'd be feeling a bit aggrieved if you were a Matsumoto supporter, seeing that on the replay. But hard fought win for Niigata, Stu.
Yeah, I completely agree with the penalty. I think the only thing I can think of when you look at the replay is the ball takes a little bit of a detour, but that because Sakano gets there first, that's why. And the Niigata defender comes in from the blind side, and I mean it. And the referee's in a good position. That's the thing as well, because the Matsumoto players didn't really have that far to run and run and berate him, I think. But yeah, I mean, it's a welcome clean sheet for Niigata. I think that they were going to get one sooner or later, but I didn't think they'd pick it up at home to Matsumoto, who have looked decent going forward. I think Pedro Manzi started. I'm not sure Arata Watanabe started. It's nice to see a little bit of kind of flexibility in Niigata's kind of attacking flow. I think something else that struck me from watching this game is Serginho, Matsumoto's kind of Brazilian forward. He's rapidly turning into one of my favourite players, because whenever Matsumoto go forward, he's in the middle of it. And he's one of those players that the more I watch him, the more, like, it's really weird to explain, but you don't know where he's going to be because he doesn't have a set position, but you instinctively know that he's going to be where the ball is going, if that makes sense. It's like he knows where he can influence play, and he drops off the front, he goes out wide, and he's really, really good with the ball at his feet, but he makes these really intelligent runs as well. And I think he had a couple of chances in this game that possibly on other days he might have scored, but he's really, really influential for the way Matsumoto play. And kind of, I think they can count themselves unlucky to come away from this game with definitely not getting on the score sheet, because they should have had. If it wasn't a penalty, it was a free kick right on the edge of the area. I'm happy for the goalkeeper, Fujita. Obviously, he had a bit of a mare last week against Kanazawa, and then to follow it up with his first kind of J-League clean sheet, it was you could see the players as well. The players were really happy for him at the end of the game. But yeah, good result for Niigata. I think Matsumoto, but you're quite right, Matsumoto will feel highly aggrieved at the outcome of this game.
I take your point about Serginho. He does have that kind of uncoachable skill, doesn't he, of kind of knowing, seeming to have a sixth sense where the ball's going to be. I think you might be more in love with his hairstyle than anything else, though. It's an incredible peroxide sort of, I don't know, Fohican?
Fohican, yeah.
let's move on quickly. We'll talk about Tokushima's game down in Ryukyu against FC Ryukyu now, Stu. So Tokushima ended up running out 3-1 winners here, but Tokushima's goalkeeper Toru Hasegawa, who was in the first team again starting instead of Naoto Kami Fukumoto, he had to make a good save from Koki Kazuma to keep it 0-0. Tokushima took the lead in the 22nd minute when Kazuki Nishia's shot struck Koki Sugimori and wrong-footed Danny Carvajal in the Ryukyu goal. I thought there was a hint of offside about this one, but the goal stood regardless. I didn't see a good angle on the replay, so I might be wrong. Now, Takuma Abe leveled things up for Ryukyu with an absolutely brilliant goal 5 minutes into the second half, which is one of my favourite goals of the weekend. Just a nonchalant kind of cushioned volley. It's difficult to describe, but he just kind of reacted like that's the sort of thing he does all the time, but it isn't. It was a brilliant goal. And then, yeah, towards the end, it became the Masaki Watai show, didn't it? The young speedster scored twice in the last 40 minutes, two very slick finishes, and ended up handing the points to Tokushima. Just 1 point from the first 12 available for Ryukyu, Stu, so the second bottom as we look at the table now. I was interested in the centre-back pairing that they had here. So Tetsuya Chinen, a rookie, made his debut, and his partner was Lee Yong-jik, who Verdi, you know, last year tended to play in midfield or up front. So I'm not sure they've got the right combination at centre-back. I don't know whether there's some injuries or just a reshuffle there. What did you think of Ryukyu and Tokushima based on this one?
Yeah, I mean, it was interesting because, like you said, Hasegawa made a really good save from Corky Kazama's kind of long-range shot, and Tokushima were pretty lucky to go in 1-0 up at the break, I think. I don't know. I know Ryukyu haven't started well, but I remember it's something you often say is that kind of you can accept defeats if you can see how the team is trying to play. And going forward, Ryukyu haven't really scored the goals this season, but it's not difficult to see what they want to do. And it's not difficult to see how they want to play. So they've got obviously Takuma Abe leading the line, and they play that fashionable kind of three behind him. So on Saturday, they played Koya Kazama on one side, Motegi on the other, and they've got this player that I don't really know a lot about, Yoshio Koizumi. He's got this, like, he's the bleach blonde kid who plays just off the front. It was his ball that put Takuma Abe who set up Takuma Abe's goal. And Koizumi seems to be in the middle of a lot of good things that Ryukyu do. And obviously, they're down at the bottom of the table, so they need to get points on the board. Pretty sharpish, but I can see what they're trying to do going forward. But like you say, it's at the back, like Lee Yong-jik and like Tetsuya Chinen, and they don't look good. I mean, the Watai's first goal was a horrendous set of defending. It was just flat out bad. I'd have been embarrassed if I'd have seen that on the park pitches on a Sunday morning back in England, because Watai just ran from the sideline to the corner of the 6-yard area and no one went to him. I don't know what the defenders were thinking, but it was just flat out bad defending. And then they got dinged on the counter attack by Yuki Kakita and Watai again. And I think that they've obviously got a good goalkeeper in Danny Carvajal, but in front of him, like the centre back is so important, and the partnership that they have there obviously isn't working at the moment. Again, I'm not really sure where the injuries are or where the depth is, but they need to really get that sorted, or they need to pair someone else up with Koki Kazama as a shield, in the defensive side of the midfield. But yeah, Ryukyu host Nagasaki on Wednesday, and so it's going to be another tough assignment for Ryukyu's defense. And so tricky times, I think, at Ryukyu, while they kind of find their footing on both sides. Like, they need to settle on a defensive system, but they also need to kind of start taking the chances when they go forward as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good balanced analysis, Joe. I like the way you turned quickly from, you know, complimenting the attack to chewing out the defence. I think you're spot on with that, to be honest. Okay, let's move on to Kyoto then, and their game against Fukuoka. Now, Kyoto won this one 2-0 at the Sanga Stadium by Kyocera. Contractually obliged to mention that, I think. This was a pretty good game, I think, Stu. So Fukuoka had two good chances to go in front. Unfortunately, one of them was fired straight at Kyoto's goalkeeper, Tomio Wakahara, and Wakahara made a brilliant save from the other. And Kyoto went 1-0 up in the 34th minute. Ryunosuke Noda headed in Jordy Boyce's brilliant cross. I'm still trying to work out what Jordy Boyce was doing on the right wing, but it wasn't clear from the highlights whether he just wandered there or he was left there from a set play minutes earlier. After that, Kyoto went 1-0 up. It was 2-0 6 minutes later. Peter Utaka scored a penalty, which was awarded for handball. Jun Suzuki for Fukuoka hit the crossbar with a free kick just before the break. But it was 2-0 at half time. Fukuoka did get the ball in the net in the second half, which I think Douglas Grolley might have got the last touch, but it was ruled out correctly, I think, for a foul on the goalkeeper by Juanma, who was not best pleased with this decision. It looked a pretty clear foul on the replays. And that leaves Kyoto ticking over quite nicely in fourth place, Stu. But I think Fukuoka might take quite a few positives from this one. What do you think?
Yeah, definitely. I think Kyoto have actually, they've come out of their last three games because they came back after the break from COVID, and think they hosted Jubilo Iwata, which they won at home. Then they went to Tokushima and drew, and now they've beaten Avispa Fukuoka. Those are three tough games, back to back to back, and they look like they're slowly hitting their stride. And yeah, I mean, it helps when your central defender starts popping up on the right hand side and whipping in beautiful crosses for big tall strikers, which is exactly what Boyce did for Norda. I mean, Fukuoka did have their chances, and I think Wakahara is slowly cementing his place in the Kyoto side. It's he's still young. The goalkeeper, Tomoya Wakahara, I'm speaking about. Still young, but he is getting better and better. And now, this year, he's got three really experienced players in front of him. He's got Jun Ando, Jordy Boyce as well. Of course, he's got Ryota Moriwaki as well. And so they can bail him out and they can give him advice, and they can kind of, as long as the communication's good, they can really help him grow as a goalkeeper. And yeah, he's a good shot stopper. I think he needs a bit more kind of command of his area, but that will come. I mean, I mean, there's only so much of the area you can command if strikers are hell bent on putting their elbow in your neck. And so, but just getting out there and getting those free kicks is part of being a goalkeeper. And I think, but yeah, Avispa did play well in this game, but you know, they've got a big game coming up on Wednesday as well. They host Jubilo. I know it's still early on in the season, but you need to, if you want, because there's no playoffs, if you really want to start stamping your promotion credentials, they probably need to pick up another win pretty soon, I would say. But there were hopeful signs there. But Kyoto look pretty good and pretty strong at the moment, I would say.
It's not nice to hear at least one of our preseason kind of tips is bearing fruit.
Just the one. It's all right.
Yeah, quite interesting celebration from Kyoto as well, I think, for the first goal. I'm not sure what was going on there, some kind of orchestral conductor, but I think that people can find that on YouTube, I think, probably, if they want to see it. We had some weird celebrations that are going on at Kyoto as well, which is good to see. Okay, let's talk about Omiya Ardija now, Stu. So they're joint top of the league at the moment with four wins from four. That's because they beat Tokyo Verdy 1-0, NAC 5, on Saturday evening. We should mention Chris from Lost in Football Japan was at this one and has a video out now, kind of going into the experience of being back at a J-League game for the first time post-COVID. I urge everybody to give that a watch, because it's up to the usual
high
standards. Yeah. Very high standards that we expect from Chris, to be honest. yeah, just kidding. It's great and it's worth watching. Yeah, it just always makes me jealous that I'm not at a stadium. That's the only downside. It's worth dealing with. So in this game, Stu, both teams gave debuts to new foreign goalkeepers, which doesn't happen that often. It was a Serbian, Filip Klajic, who made his debut for Omiya. And it's emerged that's because the regular number one, Kasahara, is out injured for about 6 weeks, I think. So we might be seeing more of Mr. Klajic over the coming games. There's some speculation that he might be Omiya's first ever foreign goalkeeper. I saw that going around on Twitter, but naturally I didn't bother to actually check. So we just assume it's true.
Sure.
Now, a Brazilian goalkeeper, Mateus, started for Verdy. It was a nightmare start because horrible defending, particularly from a player who I liked a lot last year, John Kikwoike, who just sort of stood there and did nothing, allowed Daisuke Watabe to nip in and put Omi ahead inside the first minute. And it could have been a lot worse, I think, on the half hour. Matias, the goalkeeper, tangled with Noriyoshi Sakai inside the penalty area. Looked like a penalty to me. Nobody seemed to make any representations to the referee or want a penalty, but yeah, definitely Matias, there's contact with the Omiya player who doesn't get the ball. So yeah, that was a weird one.
I thought it was a clear penalty. I was astounded that no one appealed for it. It's like it doesn't get much clearer than that. And I'm just
not really sure what the referee saw other than a foul by the goalkeeper. But yeah, lucky escape for Verdi. There, they had another escape in the second half when their defender Yuta Naroa nearly scored an own goal, and another Omiya player that I didn't catch who, but missed an open goal. But to be fair, it was at full stretch late on, would have made it 2-0. I think Ipe Shinazuka provided the cross. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, the chance was missed, and that leaves Omiya top of the pile with 4 wins from 4, Stu, but Verdi down in 20th. The word I've written in my notes with them is limp. Which is never a word you want associated with your football team. But yeah, there you go. What did you make of this one?
I wondered where that was going then. But yeah, I think judging by what I saw in this game, I'm not surprised at either team's kind of position in the league. I think once Omiya went in front, I think they're best when they're in front because they can counter-attack really well because they're compact in the right spaces, but when they do spring forward, they do have this width that they can count on, and it's probably not a good place to be behind against Omiya because they will be able to do that. I think the defending was horrific for Watabe's goal. Like you said, Koike just stood there for whatever reason, and Mateus's first action was to pick the ball out of the back of his net. I mean, I think that they look aside from Yuhei Sato, they look like there's a lack of invention there. They look, it's like I don't want to say a stereotypical Verdi team, but you know, the kind of like, it looks pretty, like they've got like technical players, and they've got they look all right, but there's no teeth there right now. There's no kind of like getting up in your face and rolling up your sleeves and whatever other kind of cliches you want to put forward to them. Like they look limp and they look kind of devoid of kind of attacking kind of prowess. Now whether that'll change with don't know, a change in formation or a change in personnel, I don't know, but so far they don't look very good, and to be quite frank, they deserve to be down where they are, I think.
Okay, just the 38 cup finals left for Verdi then.
just the 38, yes.
Yeah. I can't disagree with any of that. I think some of the more experienced players have been really disappointing so far. Harrier Ide's done nothing. Hiroki Kawano can't get in the team. So we'll see. Early days. Another team who's having it off, so to speak, Stu, is Nagasaki. Now, their level with Omiya aren't at the top. 4 wins from 4 games so far. That's because they beat Ehime 2-0 at Transcosmos Stadium at the weekend. Nagasaki should have been in front at half-time, but Keimen Togashi lobbed over the bar from the edge of the box. A difficult chance, but a really good chance to open the scoring, which was missed. I think the deciding factors here for me, with a heavy rain that sort of started, I think, in the first half, but was just noticeable, kind of turned the pitch pretty much into a quagmire in the second half. And the double substitution, which is something you've called on earlier pods, Stuart, Victor Ibarbo and Caio Cesar, who came in for Nagasaki in the 76th minute here. But it was the 84th minute when things got really interesting. Ehime's goalkeeper, Masahiro Okamoto, took a goal kick, slipped on his behind whilst making contact with the ball, which meant that the ball was presented to Ibarbo, who dribbled into the penalty area. I don't know if I'm being unkind or not here. It's the weekly part where I have a go at Ibarbo for something that he may or may not have done. Let's put it this way. I think he makes the most of some contact from a defender to win a penalty, which he then scores. So Nagasaki 1-0 up. And then 2 minutes later, no controversy about this goal whatsoever. Caio Cesar thumping home a corner very emphatically for the 2-0 win for Nagasaki. What do you think of the game, Stu? And am I... Should I be banned from mentioning Ibarbo in future?
I actually thought it was a clear penalty. This may be where we differ. Like, I think that he was knocked off balance in the process of shooting. That's just my opinion. I've been known to be wrong before, but I've not been known to be wrong about Nagasaki's substitutions, because they are game changing. And I started to think about, like, what is the role of Victor Ibarbo now? Is he happy just coming off the bench for the last 20, 30 minutes and just doing his thing? Does he want to be in the starting lineup? I assume most players want to be in the starting lineup, but when you've got the kind of, not the reputation, but the wherewithal to come on and change the game, that's a high value commodity. And both goal scorers, like you said, Victor Ibarbo, Caio Cesar as well. I mean, like you said as well, the heavy rain, which they've had a lot of in Nagasaki, and we should point that out as well, they, like, when you're a team defending with heavy legs and with kind of incessant rain, probably the last thing you want to see after an hour is two players of the caliber and experience of Caio Cesar and Victor Ibarbo coming on. Now, I mean, the circumstances leading up to the penalty were unfortunate for Ehime, because it's no one's fault that Okamoto slipped. It's just one of those things that does happen from time to time, heavy rain. But yeah, the substitutes again change the game in Nagasaki's favor, and it's not a coincidence. It happens too often, and for all the times that we bashed Tegura Mori last year, he's got it absolutely spot on this year with his substitution timings, but also the changes that he does make and the setup of the team. And they look like they've got it looks like they don't have a starting 11, but they have a starting 14, if that makes sense. They can interchange any of those players and not a lot of difference in the makeup of the team. It just depends on who's tired or who's having an off day for that game. And they look good. They've won all four. They've won all four on merit. And yeah, they go to Ryukyu on Wednesday. It's hard to see them not getting anything from that game, and so yeah, the Nagasaki bandwagon rolls on, and they deserve to be where they are, and we deserve to Tegura Mori deserves the credit for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it was one of those games which you do have to win to be up at the top, because it could easily have petered out into a 0-0 draw, couldn't it? With the last sort of 4 or 5 minutes still at 0-0. So yeah, credit to Nagasaki for keeping going and getting the job done. By hook or by crook, that's something you have to do if you want to be up at the top of the league, I think. We'll talk about, I think it's fair to say, a less entertaining game overall, Stu, which is Yamagata's 1-1 draw at home to Mito. So no goals in the first half here. But Yamagata did nearly score from a deflected cross. And at the start of the second half, Mito's Koichi Murata had a shot tipped onto the post by Yamagata's goalkeeper, Akihiro Sato. But a goal finally came on the hour mark from Yamagata. That was a low drive from Ryoma Watanabe. 12 minutes later, Kazumi Yamaguchi scored an absolutely brilliant goal. Probably one of the top three of the weekend, I think, to earn a point for Mito. I didn't have many other notes about this game, Stu. Not a great deal really happened, but what did you think?
I watched this game, actually. I watched this game in full on... When did I watch it? I watched it today, actually. And it was really... it was entertaining, actually. There was some interesting stuff going on, because obviously... Mito got hammered by Jeff last week, and what they did, they stuck a defender, Ndoka Boniface, they stuck him in the midfield for this game, because Yamagata often play, they only play one striker, so Mito usually play four defenders, but what that does is, if there's only one forward, true forward to mark, then it gives the opposition a numerical advantage in the midfield. So what Mito did is they stuck Boniface as a shield, and it worked, because it nullified a lot of the good attacking stuff that especially Yuji Yamagishi, who is really good in that role as a shadow forward. They kind of nullified him. He really didn't get into the game. And if you nullify Yamagishi, you do a lot of kind of damage to the way that Yamagata liked to play. I think that, Akihiro Sato, it was a surprise to see him in goal, because usually, obviously, it's Masatoshi Kushibiki, who's the goalkeeper at Yamagata. Usually, I think he's injured. But Sato produced, there was the save you mentioned where he palmed it onto the post and it rolled back into his hands. It's very nice as a goalkeeper when that happens. There was also a save in the first half where he stuck out a strong hand. It reminded me a little bit of Peter Schmeichel, the way he just stuck a strong hand out to stop the ball from going past him. And yeah, I think you're right with Yamaguchi's goal. It was beautifully taken from the corner of the area, just kind of curled it past the goalkeeper and into the, not quite into the top corner, but it just curled in, and it looked wonderful on the replay. And it was a decent performance from Mito, because you know, you get slightly worried when you kind of suffer a home defeat, and obviously Yamagata traditionally quite good up in their mountain stronghold of Tendo up there, and especially going behind, it was a good point for Mito, actually. Impressed with the way they set up, and they set up well defensively, but they weren't defensively set up, if that makes sense. Like they had a good selection of chances, which on another day with another kind of striker and a goalkeeper in less dominant form, they might have gone on to win this game, because I think they were possibly the better side in this game. So positive signs for Mito after that kind of meek capitulation against Jeff last week.
Good analysis. It'll be interesting to look for us to see if that Boniface, you know, being pushed into midfield happens, you know, in other games this season, especially away games. That might be something to watch out for. Yeah, thanks for the analysis, Stu. We got a lot more out of that than I expected, but it's pleasing. Okay, talking of pragmatism and cautious play, let's talk about Jeff Chiba's home game against Tochigi. Now, we sort of half called this one last week, Stu, because we mentioned how well Jeff had played winning 3-0 at Mito in round three. But we also sounded a note of caution that Jeff do have a habit of doing this every now and again, but not consistently. So it was back down to earth this time. Tochigi won 1-0 at Fukudodenchi against Jeff. My notes say typical Jeff. And a classic smash and grab from Tochigi here. So Jeff had more of the possession, more of the chances, as you'd expect, I think. But a great header from the old-timer, Kisho Yano, in the 34th minute was enough for Tochigi to take all 3 points. And they nearly got another one on the counter in the second half, but wasted the chance. Katie Yamashita had a good chance for Jeff near the end, but he spanked it way over the bar. Disappointing defeat for Jeff in this one, Stu. And I think, as we said last week, the Ahn Jung-kwan revolution is not quite fully formed yet.
Ahn Jung-kwan? Yoon Jung-kwan? Ahn Jung-kwan the South Korean forward who scored in the World Cup, right?
Well, he's not helping Jeff either.
No, he's not. He's not. I think that, this was, I mean, to be fair, we should have expected this. Like, it's just managers change, players change, but Jeff don't. And like, but you're quite right in saying it was a bit of a smash and grab. Great header, a great cross as well from the left from I think it was Sagawa who put that ball in. And yeah, I mean, Kisho Yano, he's a big, tall kind of lump of a forward, but it was a really good header because it gave Shota Arai no chance, because it was one of those headers that was it gets crossed in from an angle, but Yano heads it straight. But that means, because the goalkeeper's tracking the ball from an angle, he's already moving to the left. And yeah, there's nothing he can do, because Arai can't change direction that quickly. And then after that, I think who's the goalkeeper at Tochigi? Shiota? Yeah, Shiota's the goalkeeper. I think he played well, and I don't remember that many clear cut chances for Jeff from the highlights that I watched. Maybe it was just one of those games. I think Tochigi needed this win. I think they needed to get on the board, and they needed to get some confidence. I mean, it looked like they didn't play particularly kind of expansively or even well, for that matter. But at the same time, they're in a position where they probably don't care that much. I would say they just needed to get a confidence boost on the board. Be interested to see how Jeff respond to this one, because they're away at, I think they're away in Kanazawa on Wednesday. That's which right. Which will be an interesting game for them. I'm still loath to make any kind of ironclad kind of like assessments on Jeff, because I think it's still early. But again, you've just seen in the Tochigi game and the Mito game the previous week, just there are still huge variances in what they can do on any given week, and it's going to be difficult to predict Jeff. That's the only prediction I'm safe in making about them, I think, is that they're going to be difficult to get a read on anytime soon.
I think what I will say about Jeff very quickly before we move on is they tend to play well and look good when things go their way. So, like, for example, they scored in the first minute at home to Ryukyu back in February in round one, and they were able to hang on and get the win. Obviously, they scored first against Mito last weekend and went on and ended up cruising to a 3-0 win. But if Jeff don't score first, they don't tend to react that well. Like, I mean, can you remember any good, like, Jeff comebacks? I can't really remember any from going back 3 or 4 years. Well, they often don't come back and draw even when they go behind. So I think it might be a mental thing.
Well, that's weird, because like we said, like, managers change, players change, the goalkeepers change, like the forwards change. It's just weird that something like that would just kind of permeate through. I don't know what it permeates through. Does it permeate the club? Does it permeate the stadium? Does it permeate
juju?
It's bad juju. Yeah, they need someone to do whatever around the corner flags or that kind of stuff. Yeah, they need to get rid of it quickly. But yeah, it is a good point, and it's just, yeah, it's, I suppose that's the $64 million question. Like, if, how do you get rid of that? Because if you do get rid of that, then they become an instantly better team. But I mean, it's easier said than done, really.
It's a sleeping giant, Stu.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about another sort of not sleeping giant, but not exactly wide awake either, Jubilo Iwata. So they got a morale boosting win over the weekend, 2-1 at home against Yamaguchi. So Koki Ogawa missed a couple of chances for Iwata early on in this game. He doesn't really look at his best right now, to be honest. Masaya Matsumoto also hit the crossbar for the home side before a 41st minute volley from Lukian from close range gave them the lead at the break. Now, Lukian scored a brilliant second goal on the hour mark, dribbling the ball for about 50 yards before ghosting past the defender and beating the keeper. I think that the problem solved for me with Lukian, he was just a dribbler. He just needs to be dribbling with the ball and he looks great. There was time for a different kind of player to catch the eye, though, before the end. Yamaguchi's Brazilian striker, Yuri, who pulled a goal back with 5 minutes left. I've been impressed with him every time I've seen him this year. But it finished 2-1 to Iwata, and I think it was an important win for Jubilo, wasn't it, this one?
I think it was. When I watched Lukian's second goal, it looked very Thierry Henry-like. You know, when he runs down the left-hand side, but he cuts in and just curls it past the goalkeeper. It's very Henry-ish type of finish, I think. I think probably Jubilo were the better team in this game, but you're right, Yuri does look a good player. I mean, he finds space in the box really well, and he's quick. So when he makes the move, you'll notice that when he scores the goal, he's in acres of space. There's no one near him in the box, and he slides in and he volleys it in. And you have to remember that that's 5 minutes from the end of a game where the opposition were leading 2-0. So there's no reason that Jubilo shouldn't have had enough cover in the penalty area. But because Yuri is so quick and so intelligent with his movement, or he seems so intelligent with his movement, he's able to find that space in the area, like the soft spot in the zone marking, or however you want to phrase it. Like, it was a really clever goal, and it was clever movement from him. Ultimately, I think Jubilo, they do have a bit too much class for Yamaguchi. Yamaguchi haven't really had the best of times since they've come back from the COVID-19 break. Obviously, they beat Kyoto Sanga first up in the first game of the year, but since they've come back, they've only taken, I think it's 1 point from their three games. They obviously were beaten handsomely by Ehime. They obviously lost against Jubilo as well. And I said this a lot last year, I think the sum of their parts is actually better than their position. But I think it's quite clear now that year on year, they just can't keep hemorrhaging players like they do. I mean, it's all very well being like a finishing academy for players, but if you lose players at a quicker rate than you can replace them, then you're obviously going to have stuff like this. Gifu have had that in the past. I think Tokyo Verde have had a similar issue. The quality looks less than it was last year. I mean, ultimately, Shimoda is a really, really good manager, and they'll probably get up around kind of 16th, 15th, 14th. But just you just can't keep losing the caliber of player that that Yamaguchi do. Obviously, they lost Ryuho Kikuchi from the center of defense. They lost who's the one who went to Shonan Belmari? Miyuki, the midfielder. Obviously, we spoke about Yamashita Keita, who went to Jeff United as well. There's just like they're good players, and you can't keep losing those players and expect the same results that came with those quality players. So I'm a little bit worried about Renault. I think obviously there's no relegation, so saying that they'll be all right is a little bit of an empty statement. But maybe the lack of, it's not lack of investment, because obviously they've obviously bought in Yuri, but the departure of good, very good at this level quality players is telling so far this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's really good analysis. And as you mentioned, there are a number of teams in a similar situation, aren't there, in terms of just losing players and not being able to replace them. Yeah. Okay, one game left on the slate to wrap up from the J2 weekend, Stu. So we should talk about Machida Zelvia's first win of the season. They picked up a 1-0 win on the road at Gunma over the weekend. Now, Gunma's goalkeeper, Keiki Shimizu, was in great form here, making a string of fine saves, including tipping a header from Kota Fukatsu onto the post in the second half. Now, you mentioned this earlier on, but Gunma should have scored in the first half when Yuto Nakayama went clean through, but he messed it up. Like, it's not when you're on a run of three straight defeats, step overs in front of the goalkeeper are not what is required when you go clean through. So I'm not really sure what he was trying to do there. This game seemed to be heading for a goalless draw, though. To be honest, you needed something special to beat Keiki Shimizu, and it came in the end with 15 minutes left from Leo Takai. He sent a low drive into the bottom corner of the net from about 25 yards to give Machida all 3 points, and I think he got a place in DAZN's team of the week into the bargain as well. So what did you think of this game? And I like your comments on Yuto Nakayama's fluffing his lines in front of goal.
I'm glad you used that F word and not another one, because that's what he did. I mean, like I said to you back when we spoke about Ryo Sato's goal for Kitakyushu, Nakayama just had too much time, and I think he thought about it too much, and then you have to question the thought process where instead of shooting he does a double step over it just completely messes it up.
It's like when you press the wrong button on FIFA.
Yeah, you do a through ball instead of shoot, and it just like dribbles out of play. And it's, I think that I mean, again, it's a bit of a cliche, but when you're down on your luck and when you're down at the bottom, that kind of stuff happens. But that would be to absolve Nakayama of blame, because, I mean, not to even shoot at that point was bad. It was just flat out bad. It was just... and I genuinely think he had too much time to think about it. I think Akimoto forced him into a decision because he stayed big and he had a good angle on him, but yeah, that was just poor from Nakayama. But it was the opposite of Gunma's goal, because it was a great finish, but it was also a good build-up play down the right hand side. I think I always get this guy's name on Chong Gun Jung or Chong Jung Gun, I can't remember which way around it is. A player I really like did well down the right hand side. I think he combined with another substitute, Masovic, and yeah, the ball got laid out to Takai, who just kind of passed it into the net, really. Even though it's from like 25 yards, he used the defender as a screen to bend the ball around. And yeah, Shimizu Keiki, who had a really good game up until that point, he just didn't have a chance with that. And I think it was a needed win for Machida. And, you know, we've said that slightly, I don't think we said boring, but slightly blunt up front. I mean, on another day, they would have won this game 3-0. But on another day, they could have lost it 1-0 as well. And it's probably something they'll obviously be relieved to get out of Gunma with a win. I think there's positives, but there's also a couple of things that Ranko Popovic will want to work on as well. But really good goal from Takai, and they should be thankful that Yuto Nakayama just kind of completely messed things up as well.
Press square next time.
Dink it over the goalkeeper.
Okay, good analysis as ever. I think, Stu. So we talked about all the J2 games from the weekend. We should just bring the listeners up to speed on the upcoming midweek games. So round five is this Wednesday, July 15th. All the games will be at 7 o'clock. So we have, just running through them quickly, Yamagata hosting Gunma, Mito take on Matsumoto, Tochigiya hosting Omiya at Green Stadium. That's Omiya going for a fifth straight win. Obviously, and Tochigi may be buoyed by that win away at Jeff, so it could be an interesting game. Tokyo Verdy hosting Kofu. A game that I like the look of is Machida hosting Niigata, principally because Machida have only conceded one goal so far this season. That was a penalty against Verdy right at the end. Niigata have scored 10 in their four games. So something's got to give here, I feel, Stu, one way or the other. Kanazawa hosting Jeff Chiba, as we mentioned. Tokushima hosting Yamaguchi as well. Looks like a good game. Ehime v Okayama is on the slate. We also talked a little bit about Fukuoka against Iwata. I think this is a good test of both teams to see how they're doing development-wise this season, because it's two works in progress for me. Kita Kyushu against Kyoto looks like a good game as well. And yeah, joint top Nagasaki there on the road at FC Ryukyu. Nagasaki going for 5 straight wins. And yeah, Ryukyu looking pretty good going forward and not so good at the back at the moment. So that'll be an interesting to see Ibarbo coming off the bench in that one and see what happens. Yeah, which game do you like the look of, Stu?
I like Kita Kyushu against Kyoto. I think it's a game that Kyoto probably think they should win, but Kita Kyushu are coming off the back of 2 very, very good wins. Obviously, they beat Ryukyu last week, and they saw off Okayama on Friday night. They are well organized, they're well drilled, as you mentioned before, with Shinji Kobayashi, and they look, with especially with Daigo Takahashi on the right hand side, I think that how he fares against kind of the left hand side of Kyoto's defense, which is I think usually Jun Ando is the left hand side of the he's the furthest left of the 3 center backs that play there, and also they set up with against Fukuoka they had Araki Daigo on the left hand side as well. So I think between them, like how Takahashi plays there, I think will be a key to the game. I think teams that have an idea of automatic promotion this year will look to win in Kita Kyushu, and I think that a strong, organized Kyoto team should have the wherewithal to do it. But now you're starting to see the games come thick and fast. You're probably starting to see a little bit of squad rotation. It wouldn't surprise me to see Miyayoshi come in, for instance, for either one of Noda Ryunosuke or Peter Utaka. And I think this will be an interesting game, and I think it'll be an interesting test of Kyoto's promotion credentials.
I think there's plenty of intriguing games on the Wednesday slate. Just on that point, I think we should mention that the weather forecast for the whole week this week across Japan is pretty rubbish, isn't it? It's going to be rainy, you know, at least some of these grounds, probably quite heavily. That's something to keep an eye on as well, I feel, that the weather conditions could play a big part. Before we get into some J3 action, Stu, we'll just give a quick shout out to the Prediction League that's running over on the Transfer Market website now. If you want to get involved, if you want to join in and embarrass yourselves like I've done over the last couple of weeks, get in touch with at Condre or at Okinawa Aussie on Twitter. They can get you set up with the confusing German menus on the website. Okay, so a quick roundup of what happened over the weekend in J2. There were some big scores being put up over the weekend, not by me, but someone called Sean Carroll is at the top of the J2 prediction table, Stu. Gifu Richie and James T in hot pursuit. In J3, another new name, Jeff Osborne, is the leader. So it's a bit suspicious because I think he sounds like one of the organisers of this thing. A pair of Gifu types, Gifu Richie and Stuart Smith. They're also hot on Jeff's heels in the J3 standings. I think Gifu Richie had the highest individual score this week with a whopping 42 points. In J1, the enigmatic Tea Master still sits atop the leaderboard. Tom Pennington from the FC Tokyo Kai guys is just below. And we won't mention how the J Talk Pod guys are doing on that one. for J1. For the JFL, no scores yet because I believe it kicks off this coming weekend.
I think
They're not up and running yet. So if you're hardcore and you want to get involved in the JFL as well, get in touch with Condre or Okinawa Aussie, and they'll sort you out, so to speak. Okay.
So that concludes the first period of J-Talk Extra Time, where we focused on the J2 games from last weekend. In a separate podcast, we'll go on to analyze the J3 goings-on and shenanigans. But in the meantime, enjoy the theme tune.